Today is October 9th, and we are going to read through a perek of Mishlei, which is going to be chapter 7. What we did until now, going through the text, was to travel a little bit through chapter 4 and see some crucial generalities of a life well lived through the lens of Torah. Mishlei knows that there are many different definitions of virtue. Discussion that appears in Plato's Republic, where Socrates attempts to define virtue, and gives a lot of people in the audience a chance to the dialogues to chime in what they think virtue is, and he shows them that they're all wrong. And when he is asked himself, okay, you've proved that we're wrong, so what do you think the definition of virtue is? He says, I don't know, but I'm sure it's not what you guys say it is. Yeah, that's typical with what he usually said about everybody else. He said, I'm smarter than you because you think you're smart. I know I'm not. Right? So, be that as it may, I agree with his assessment that a human being is maybe because it's so diverse, maybe hamstrung in determining an objective definition of what is the good life. Right, you want to encapsulate that into one sentence. Chapter 4 does that all over the place. Right, there is a Gemara like this. Does it sound familiar on Shabbos Daf Lamed, where someone wants to convert while Hillel tells him the message of all of life while you're standing on one foot? Remember what that is? So it's some kind of interpretation of Ha'afu HaKamot. He doesn't say those words. That would be a Torah piece. It's his some kind of interpretation of that, where he says he interprets that in the negative, which is a fascinating thing, because someone in the New Testament translates V'avdecha kamocha in the positive. What do I mean? Hillel says, what is hateful to you, don't do to someone else. Yeshu says, do unto others as you want them to do to you. Why the difference? Right? What's interesting is the Targum Yonasan in the Torah, I'm getting off on a little tangent here, but the Targum Yonasan to the Torah is really of unknown origin. We really don't know who wrote it. It's almost certainly not Yonasan ben Uziel, because there's so much in it that seems to be later. But in the Targum Yonasan to the Torah of the Pasuk, he writes that what Hillel says in Shabbos. What's hateful to you, don't do to someone else. And the Gemara in Sukkah and Baba Basra say that the main student of Hillel was Yonas ben Uziel. Right, the Gemara Megillah says he wrote the Targum from the beginning. But there is a Targum to the Torah, open up and across the nose. You see, there's a Targum there, and it says Yonas ben Uziel. Whether it's him or not, this is this is one of the proofs that the purists who claim that if it says Yonas ben Uziel, it must be Yonas ben Uziel. You say it probably was that someone wrote Tuf Yud at the top of a manuscript, and it should have been Targum Yerushalmi, because it has Jerusalem type of Aramaic as opposed to Onkelos, which has Babylonian Aramaic. And someone mistakenly read it Targum Yonasan, and then it got a life of its own. Right? I'd rather study a Targum Yonasan ben Uziel than a Targum Yerushalmi, because what does the first one have that the second one doesn't? An identity. I would like to know who I'm reading. And Yonasan ben Uziel is a good identity. I don't know who wrote this Targum Yerushalmi. It could be a Christian Aramaic speaker. You know what I'm saying? That I found in the manuscript. There are about 10 different Targum Yerushalmis. All right, be that as it may, I'm just saying of the background, is that on that pasuk of Ha'afdecha Kamocha, it does seem that this is some kind of interpretation that someone was once taught while you're standing on one foot. And that's our encapsulating theme. Now go learn the rest of it. You familiar with the Gemara? Right?
Okay, Rashi discusses how could you convert someone on that basis? How do you know he's going to accept everything else?
All right, but the Marashah asks a more fundamental question. Is it really true, what you said afterwards, that the rest of the Torah is like a commentary to that? The rest of the Torah is a commentary to your commentary of your Hafluecha Kamocha? How does that work? Really, Tefillah and Tzitzis, everything has at its core B'Yahavtu Kamocha? Maybe you want to elaborate on the Re'echa. Maybe Re'echa is God also, God and people, God's image. Our job in the world is to fuse the image of God with God. Okay, I can hear all this, right? But that led some people in the ancient world to sacrifice their children to the God. You know, we stay on the right direction here. So I'll just give the Marsha's answer, then we'll move on. But I also, maybe if you're curious why Jesus says it in the positive and Hillel says it in the negative, is there a practical difference between these two? Is there a case out there that might have a different result depending on whether you understand the positive or the negative? Or we just say they're both correct in some way, right? I'm not going to say be so hunky-dory as to say they're both correct, because they're two different things. I think Hillel purposely chose not to say it in the positive. At least that's the way Shimshon Frohlo Hirsch presents it on the pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim. But first, let me answer the first question, which is the Marsha asking, how is this commentary of Ha'atlecha Kamocha, the whole Torah and everything else, is its commentary? So I must say, I don't want to disappoint you. The Marsha's answer to this question very much dissipates the meaning of this Gemara that you might have known. I looked at all of your eyes. You seem to have known this Gemara, right? You heard it before? That there was this would-be convert that went to Shammai, and he said to Shammai first, I want you to convert me while I stand on one foot. And the Gemara seems to say that what he did while he was on one foot, pretty impressed that I can do this, huh? Right? I had two hip replacements as part of my therapy, so it was balanced. Right? So I'm cut in half, and I have titanium that's connecting the Elyonim with the Tachtonim. Right? So this is part of my daily therapy. It wasn't because of an accident, it's because of arthritis. But Lamaisa, he says that you would think that you don't need Torah to help you figure out how to perform the Ha'avad Kamocha. Do you have a good sense of your own judgment what the Ha'avad Kamocha means, don't you think? Well, I know what I want, right? But what you want is very different from what you want. You know what I'm saying? So maybe what I want for myself is not what I should want for someone else. Right? Or worse, maybe what I want for myself is harmful. I don't know. So here's the point. The Marsha says that what Hillel was trying to teach him was that even the Ha'avta Kamocha, even something so elementary as don't do to someone else what you don't like to do for yourself, right? If you don't like when someone in the next row is talking at a movie, don't talk at a movie! You know what I'm saying? Or in shul. So most people talk in shul because they're not bothered by anyone else talking, so they can't imagine that anyone else should be bothered by my loud talking. Right? So what Hillel is saying to this would-be convert is, you really need, it's the exact opposite of what everyone thinks this Gemara means. He says, you can't convert while you're on your foot. You need the Torah to guide every element of your life, if that's what you want to do. You're ready to submit that the Torah is going to define everything in your life. Are you ready to submit to that? That no matter what you come up to, whatever you come up to, you're going to let the Torah define that? And he said yes. So that explains what Rashi is trying to say.
that when this man made such a commitment,
Hillel knew this man is going to break Torah, this man is going to be kosher, this man is going to keep Shabbos. Now let's teach him. That even the last thing that you would think that doesn't need Torah to define it, there's Hilchos Tzedakah. There are ways to give Tzedakah. Why should you get up? Who cares? I'm doing something so fakind, so fundamentally humane as giving tzedakah. Why should there be any law about how to do so? I'll do it the way I think so. No. You need the definition to be defined by you, for you. Socrates is right. No human can actually define these things. You submit to the Torah's definition. Now, here's the beauty. Shivim panim laTorah. Hillel thinks it's this. Shammai thinks it's that. Okay, lasit l'charav. Find a good system. It's not monolithic. The only thing that's monolithic in Judaism is one sentence. Can they say one sentence? Yeah. Avodah Zarah is never allowed. That's a monolithic statement. Can anyone want to come up with a monolithic statement? In other words, this is always true. So yes, genocide is always not allowed. I don't know if it's a mullet and they're, you know, say the worst type of behavior is always not. What can I say? I don't want to get into really crazy stuff here, but I'm just trying to say is that within the framework of submitting to Torah, there are some illegitimate approaches because that don't follow the rules, or just as there's some illegitimate approaches to brain surgery, such as if anyone in this room would now perform it, right? As good intentions as we may have, right? There are some illegitimate approaches to presentation to Torah. You know what I'm saying? So, okay, that's the first question. Everyone satisfied, right? That what Hillel actually meant by what's hateful to you, don't do to someone else, right? How on earth is that the whole Torah? Now the rest is commentary. No, what he meant to say is everything out there needs commentary of the Torah, even what I just told you. Wow. It's a whole restructuring of that Gemara. Now, to answer my second question. Anybody remember what my second question was? What's the qualitative difference between saying, don't do this to someone else because you don't like it, and saying, do this to someone else because that's what you would want? Anyone here would like to venture? Is there a practical difference between these two? Or do they essentially agree? And I'm not even saying perhaps that they're okay. I just said this way, you said it that way. Christianity has long bragged about the fact that we're so much more positive. We look at things in a more peaceful and more, you know, more, right? Jesus says, you know, they know that what Hillel says in the Gemara. And they know that they are contemporaries. Hillel's probably a little older. Hillel died older, and Jesus, I think, according to the history, was in his early 30s. In my polemic class, we talked about that. I think it's discredited in scholarly circles, but when Chazal say that Bilam died at the age of 33, right? Somewhere between 33 and 34, because it says, Anshe Damim Amir Malu Yechetsu Yemehem. They will not even live half a life. A life is 70 years. He died before 35. So that's Bilam we're talking about. And a lot of the things that the rabbis seem to say about Bilam is that they really wanted to say about someone else, but they knew that if they do so, they'll get burned and destroyed, and their works will be wiped out, and the city where this thing is written will be wiped out. You couldn't say those things about Christianity, much less about its Savior. So when they wanted to say something about Jesus, they just said it about Bilam. By the way, Bilam is revered very much by Christianity. He's all over the Sistine Chapel. There's a whole section for him. They love him because he predicts the Rach Kochav Ki Abi Ami Yaakov. He predicts the Messianic arrival in the distant future. Okay, all right. So what's the qualitative difference? Anyone want to come up with something? Come on, be a little proactive here, guys. Yes, what do you think? Yeah.
Doing in the positive sense, that could include things that the other person might not necessarily want, but the other person wants.
Yeah, well, okay. And let me give the same critique in the other way. You get, everyone hear this answer? Is that, I want this. How do I know you want this? Do unto others as you would like them to do to you. What if what I like is not what you like? Right? Then you could say the other way. Don't do to someone else what you don't like. That's maybe more safe, right?
Right. I would think.
Yeah. So Shimshon Frel Hirsch gives an actual case in the Talmud. This discussion doesn't come up, but he gives the case that, I mean, it's almost absurd to think of at the start, certainly in our time of communication and transportation, but I imagine, you know, on a desert island someplace, or in the desert, or on at sea when you're lost, and you just have, let's say, whatever you call it, Snicker bar is called a canteen of water, whatever it is, you have enough to survive, right? You know that the plane is going to catch up to you in 2 days, and you just have three little Snicker bars, or it's going to be 12 days, and you just cut it out slowly, slowly, so that you know you're going to have enough, you know what you need. The absurdity is, how do you know that? Right? And your friend is on the other side of the boat, and he's got nothing. Right? So mistama, if it's your child, if it's your spouse, or someone you care about, you're gonna split it and share the same fate. But the Gemara presents it on Daf Samach Beis in the Seches Bava Metzi. You're familiar with it? Right? It's a machlokes in the Gemara of what to do if you have a canteen of water that will get you just enough to Yishuv to survive, and if you split it with the one person with you, you will both die. Does that sound familiar? Sassi, have you heard this before? Right? Okay. So in Bava Metzia, Daf Samach Beis, the first position is offered by Ben Petorah. Ben Petorah says, split it, keep it, split it, and I assume he means hope for a miracle. Right? But that's not how it says. It says, split it and both die. Do not watch the other man die. Okay? Now, this is actually Christian theology. Because the Christian theology says that, let me ask you this question. If you were the one without the canteen, wouldn't you like it more if he gave it to you?
Right.
Let's say honestly, please.
Right.
You know, wouldn't you like it if he said, you know what, you have a child that's getting married, I just want to let you know I'm sick. I was diagnosed with late stage pancreatic cancer. You take the canteen. You have more to live for. I can't say I'd be upset if you did that. You know what I'm saying? In other words, whoever it is, I'm an altruistic man, I would like it. Well, if that's what you like to do, then that's what you have to do. And you know, they're both going to die of thirst, pushing it back and forth, because he's a good Christian and he's going to give it right back to you. Right? I know this sounds absurd, but Shimshon Frel Hirsch presents this as a possible difference, is that saying it in the negative is really safer. It's in general. Okay, what's fascinating this in terms of a Bible class is that when Rabbi Akiva, who disagrees with Ben Petorah, Rabbi Akiva posits that you, the person who owns the canteen or the Snickers or whatever else is going to make you survive, is told to keep it himself. It says, everyone thought the halacha is that you should share it, ad shedorash Rabbi Akiva, until Rabbi Akiva found a pasuk that teaches that you should keep it. What's the pasuk? It says at the end of Vayikra, v'chei ochicha imach, your brother shall live with you, but not at your expense. Support him and make him live with you, but not if that's going to make you die. That's Rabbi Akiva's drash. What's the fascinating thing for Bible class is that in the Sifra, you all familiar with what the Sifra is? Guys, what, you took intro? Okay, well, if you took it with me, you better know what it is. The Sifra is the Medrash Halacha to Vayikra. Right? Medrash Halacha to Bamidbar Dvarim is called Sifrei. Right. Another name for Sifra is Taras Kohanim, which is another name for Vayikra. Right. Anyone remember what the Medrash Halacha to Shmos is?
Mechilta. The Mechilta. What's the Medrash Halacha to Bereishis? Come on, answer. There is none. There's no Halacha in Bereishis. Okay. The Mechilta starts with Chodesh Hazelachem Rosh Chodeshim, the first mitzvah. Okay. So that's Medrash Halacha. There are plenty of Medrash Agoda. Bereishis Rabba, Medrash Rabba, Tatchuma, plenty of Midrashim on Agoda. These Midrashim that determine the Halacha from the Drash straight into the Pasuk. Mishnahis generally don't do that. The Gemara sometimes is, how does the Mishnah know that? And it gives Tanur Rabbanan, and it gives a Drash. Right? I say this because in the Gemara Bava Metzia, it seems to say the Halacha was naturally understood to be keep it your, I'm sorry, share it. Right? If you polled all those men in Plato's Republic who were debating what is the definition of virtue, with me? Right? Polled all those men. What should these two men do? Right? Can a just and virtuous mind determine what should be done with this canteen? Now you see how this plugs into the Gemara and Shabbos with the convert. Because just minds are going to say, of course you should split it. And ostensibly hope for a miracle. Although the Gemara says they're both going to die. 99% chance. Right? Don't ever give up hope, even if the sword is at your throat. But it's kolo that you're both still alive. Hope. Right? So it may just be a totally theoretical question that never happened, but the Gemara says that everybody said they should split it. Ad shedorash Rabbi Akiva. You see what's happening here? What does Ad shedorash Rabbi Akiva mean in light of the way I explained the Gemara of Shabbos with the convert?
People were using their own intellect to find it
until. Right. Everyone else was using their own intellect to determine what to do about this canteen situation. Until Rabbi Akiva said, this is the Torah's value system. Is this man threatening? No, he's not a Rodev. Oh, I can't believe I finished all the tissues. Anybody have a tissue here? I'm going to take a tissue from you. Okay, so actually, Dorash Rabbi Akiva. So Rabbi Akiva came about and said, "This is the Torah way of reading this." Okay, the significance for Bible class is that in the Sifra that I just described, because this pasuk v'cheachichimach appears in the Sifra in Vayikra. So in the Sifra, the Medrash Halacha on Vayikra on this pasuk. So anytime the Medrash Halacha says, okay, it tells you how this pasuk is dashing, and on this pasuk it tells you this case. And it says, Rabbi Akiva says that you should keep the canteen to yourself. And Rabben Petora darshened v'cheach yicha imach. Now, explain it as he wants to say it.
I'll share it
with you. Let him live as long as you live. Don't watch him die as you continue to live. You hear it? I happen to think Ben Petora's drash is superior. Right? Reading the pasuk. But the problem is that Rabbi Akiva is Rabbi Akiva. And there's a cloud, like halacha k'Rabbi Akiva, mechavei ro.
Whenever Rabbi Akiva argues with one person, halacha is always like Rabbi Akiva. Okay. So it seems that, you know, the Gemara's derech is what prevailed. What is going on in this drawer? You've got to keep tissues in here. Okay. All right. I'm telling you all this because Mishle is very much considered our like Torah, our Torah standard to create our value system for these things. Okay. Okay, so please open up chapter 7 with me. What are you doing? That's okay. All right. I'll hold that. I'm going to be fine. Okay. All right, let's read.
Bini. Remember how each chapter starts with the word Bini? It's very clear that this is a book of Chinuch. Shmor Amorai, Mitzvosai Titzbon Itach.
Right? Okay, this is a chiastic structure.
You see, Shmor, guard, Amorai, my sayings. Mitzvosai. Mitzvosai is parallel to Amorai, my commandments. Titzpon itach. Titzpon comes from the word, what word in Hebrew looks like, sounds a little like that. Tzafon means north. Why is Tzafon north? Because north is hidden. Matzpunim are treasures, things you hide, things you put in the safe deposit box. Right? What part of the Haggadah is where you take something that was put away from before? What is that called? Is anybody awake here? Magid rachza motzi matza maror koreich shulchan oreich. Tzafun. Tzafun barech halel nirtza. Tzafun. As you go find the hatikomen that was put, was hidden from before. Called tzafun,
right?
Mm-hmm. In the Torah, it has a word like it. At the end of the Torah, it says ki shom chelkas mechalkei tzafun v'samach. Same word, right? Tzatza. It's not much the same sounding part of the mouth, so they interchange, right? Ki shom chelkas mechalkei tzafun means that's where the place of the lawgiver is hidden. Okay, so mitzvasai titzpon itach seems to imply that some of what I have to teach you, you have to really, really guard and put it under lock and key and put it, make sure it's in your pocket. Make sure that there's a button on your pocket. Why? Because some of what I'm teaching you can naturally fall out of your pocket if you're not careful to guard it. What are those things? Shmur mitzvosai v'chiyei. Just furthermore, to convince you how important it is to guard these things, is that you'll live if you do. The sorasi ki ishon einecha. What is it? Ishon einecha?
It's like the...
What would you call that in English?
The black part.
The black, yeah. In the Rashi, it's shachor sho'ayim. In English, we call that a pupil. Okay, whether or not Hebrew has a similar pun, because this is a teacher talking to a pupil,
He says, guard it the same way you guard your pupil. What is it? Because he knows, this author knows that the part of the human body that we naturally guard more than any other, right? This, you're okay with this, but it's, you know, we have such a natural inclination to, you know, protect that part of us because it is so much more susceptible than every other part of our outside body. So he's using metaphors. Guard it like you guard your pupils. Okay. What it means also is create defense mechanisms, because there will be people out there who will try to threaten this, right? And they may seem more adept than you at defending their system. Kashreim al etzba osecha kosveim al ruach bidach. Of course, this is doctrine about tefillin. Right? Make sure that they are like strings around your finger. What does he say? Tie this wisdom around your fingers and put them near your heart. Rashbam, in his Perush to Shmos, says something that Ibn Ezra thought would sound heretical. He said that's what tefillin is. Tefillin that goes up and down, up your arm and near your heart is a physical reminder of Mitzrayim. Right? Now you see why we wear tefillin on our weak hand. Because God has a strong hand. Remind yourself of your weakness if you don't submit to God. That's really what Pasuk Gimel is saying here. Understand that there will be systems that want to give you the autonomy to determine the truth of these things. Be careful. Right? The heart, of course, doesn't have a luach in it, but you know that you understand what the metaphor is. And I see a pasuk, life and death is in the hands of the tongue. Really? What hands does a tongue have? Right? Okay, so you understand it. This metaphor is used all over Mishnah. Emor la chochma achosiat umodala bina tikra. What is that? What does that mean? Say to wisdom, you are my sister. Umodala bina tikra. You should see what Kabbalah does with Sefer Abba here and Sefer Yetzirah does with this pasuk. Oh my goodness. Because, you know, chochma is one of the very high spheros, right? So, okay, I'm not going to get into this now, but what does it mean? Emor la chochma achosiat. Say to chochma, you are my sister. Umodala bina tikra. Make sure that bina is something you know. Right, so it's the sefer tells you. You should be so familiar with knowledge the way you're familiar with your sister. Right? Okay? The difference between Chachma and Bina is that Chachma is more foundational cognitive information than Bina. Bina is what you do with your Chachma. Okay. Usually, Bina has as its source Bain, the differentiating between this and that. Okay. Shabbos citation, Shabbos Tavkuf Memhei, is that you should be so familiar with this thing, whether it's forbidden to you or permitted to you, to learn about how to resolve these issues, as if though it is so as familiar as your sister. Now we're getting down to the point of the parable. Because we have to understand the rest of this now, because it's a lot of this parak is now going to turn on this topic, is whether this Isha Zara is actually a prostitute or a wayward woman who's trying to turn you away from all that is good and wholesome with her wiles, and she knows very well how to do so, right? Or, as I think is the real pshat of this parak, this Isha Zara is actually other systems of knowledge. Okay. The Torah Maga world says, when you are totally suffused yourself, your Yira Shemayim, right? Your Yira precedes your Chachma, okay, now go read Plato's Republic and see how that enhances your Yira Shemayim. But if you learn the Chachma before your Yira, careful with that. It'll affect your Yira, and you may be left at the end of the day without Chachma either. Okay. I would say the same thing at the end of Mishlei.
Right. This is a clear one, Chazal. But the last 22 psukim. The last 22 psukim. Sorry, someone in my shul just passed away. The last 22 psukim of Mishlei, a very famous chapter that we sing every Friday night. You're familiar with it?
It's Eishes Chayil, out in alphabetical order. Aleph Pichaf.
The last 22 psukim of Mishlei is actually a song to the system of Torah, feminized, and what she does for you, right? Last 22 psukim of this sefer are trying to tell you it feminizes the system you should attract yourself to. It'll help you do all these things, right? And Perek Zion, in contrast, is telling you about the system that's going to be ruinous. It's the system that, let's see what she does to you. Nachriya mareh hechlika. Mazeh hechlika. Yaakov uses this terminology about himself. He says, "Hine Esav achi ish sa'ir, va'anochi ish chalak." So I'm smooth. I don't have hair on my arms. Chalak is smooth. I think it has a connotation like this in English. If you're a smooth talker, what is a smooth talker? Now, in Mishnah, we have a terminology called chalaklakos. Chalaklakos is someone who smooths out everything before him because he knows how to talk. You know. Right? So that's what it means here. It says that its ways are very smooth, which means here, convincing. It can convince you of anything. Right? Ki b'chalon b'si ba'ad ha'shnabi nishkafti. B'chalon b'si ba'ad ha'shnabi nishkafti. They're looking out the window. Meaning they're lying in wait. This pasuk is almost it's amazing. It's very similar to Sisera's mother, who's looking out the window. Uses the word eshnav there also, ba'ada chalon. She's looking out the window for her son. But it's here, and I'm just pointing that connection. But the pshat of the pasuk is that this thing is looking for adherence. It's looking for you. It's lurking. Right? And it's nishkafti. Nishkafti tends to have a negative connotation in Tanakh. Right? Vayashkif or vayashkef ba'ad ha'chalon. And Chazal pointed out, the only one that's not
is Hashkifa Mimon Kodshecha Min HaShamayim, Pasukim, Parshas Nitzavim. But other than that, Lashkof is always to like lurk over. Mm-hmm. Right? One last pasuk. The Eire B'Psoim Avinu B'Banim Na'ar Chasa Leiv.
The ones who are not prepared with what this thing can do to you is their foolishness is going to take them over.
So that's going to lead us into the next class, which on Thursday will be, what is this introduction meant to spare you from? What is this terrible power that's out there that's going to drive you away from your yira? That's going to be starting with Pasuk Ches. All right, so make sure to come here with your texts, right, and we're going to see the. I want you to consider the metaphors of what Bachutz means. Bachutz, especially a place like Yeshiva University. There's some things Bachutz, and there's some things that are in your house. Right? Obviously, Bachutz, we need some more discretion. And this is Parsha. It says that Noach got drunk besoch along in his tent, and his son went, and Icham saw it first, and he went bachutz, it says he went to tell his brothers bachutz. You don't have to say that, just say he went to tell his brothers. Targum Onkelos says bashuk. In other words, Noah was behaving in a particular way, but it was at least discreet. It was Vegas, right? And then Chom goes and brings it out bachutz, right? Okay, we're going to use these metaphors and understand the rest of the paradigm in the Shem next class. Okay? Alright, we'll see you then, guys. Thanks for that. To Richard. Thanks.